Saturday, it was about late morning, I got a call, and a person said, "Hey, I just saw the title of your service on Sunday." And I went, "Okay, it's great." And the title is Learn How to Be Anxiety-Free and Rich. And he said, "I can't wait to come." He said, "Because if there's any service I need to come to, I need to come to a service that teaches me how to be rich." And he was serious. And I said, and he went on to say, and he said, "And I've been waiting for you." He said, "It seems like you never, ever preach on how to be rich." And he said, "So it's long overdue, and I'm really looking forward to your service on Sunday." And I kind of had to like delicately maneuver that conversation so that I wouldn't discourage him from coming to church this morning. But then I got off the phone and I realized, wow, I wonder if a lot of people read my title, Learn How to Be Anxiety-Free and Rich, and would show up. We were going out of town yesterday, and I was on Evergreen. We were going towards 696. There was a church off to my right, and there it was exactly, it was Learn How to Be Rich. It was basically the banner, and they had a tent out, and the parking lot was packed full of people on a Saturday going to church, Learn How to Be Rich. I had a friend text me this morning who said, "Chad," he said, if you truly are going to be guiding your congregation on how to be rich," he said, "it should be packed out." But this morning we are going to be taking a look at this issue. You know, the stakes are high. We see the banners. We're getting the letters. We saw a wonderful video from George and Julie Work who have made their way here, and now you're live. It's kind of crazy. Like, you're walking into church, and I'm like, "Oh my goodness, they're here, but I just saw them there." And so, and we're talking about that all month about stewardship. But there is, with all that said, when I saw that church parking lot full, packed yesterday, and I pointed it out to my wife, I went, "Look at that. It's packed on a Saturday at noon." It was an awareness factor for me that I know a lot of people really do want to know how to be rich. And there are a lot of people out there who are telling us how to be rich. Here's an example.
Joining us right now is the star of Turnaround King, international sales expert, Grant Cardone.
Sales and personal finance expert, Grant Cardone.
Grant Cardone is an entrepreneur and author of Sell to Survive.
Grant Cardone is a real estate expert, do's and don'ts of sales seminars.
I don't want to save my way to wealth. I don't want to contract in order to become bigger. I want to expand and spend.
You'd have to decide, "Hey, I'm going to turn this around and quit making excuses, quit being distracted."
This management is about to lose everything. Their last hope, this man, Grant Cardone, expert moneymaker, business guru. But can he save this business?
It appears to me that they're not sold on their own product anymore.
And keep a family from falling apart? Turnaround King premieres Sunday, June 19th, starting at 9 on National Geographic.
Go back and restore that childlike quality you have to really get what you want. You know, I should get what I want. You should get what you want. People should have what they want. There's no shortage of money. There's no shortage of love. There's no shortage of the things people want. And so if you can sell and persuade, if you could first sell yourself an idea, "Hey, maybe there's not a shortage. Maybe I could have what I want. Now I have to learn how to get it."
So thank you for spending the next few minutes with me.
Hi. I was a sophomore in college, and I didn't know it, but I accepted an invitation to sit down at a table with the guy one-on-one, and he was a Grant Cardone, and he was very clear with me. He's like, "Chad, you're young, and you can, you know, I know you're called to ministry, but you got to take care of yourself, and ministry is not going to provide for you the way that you're going to have a family someday, and you're going to need kids, and you're going to have to provide for yourself." And this guy went on a sales pitch. An hour and a half long. I didn't understand what he was talking about most of the time. Really, I didn't. And he's like, "But you can do this. And if you do this, you'll be set. And then you can do ministry. And if you're doing, and you know, if you do really well at this, then you can have all of your life and all of your time for ministry. You don't have to worry about it." And I, at the end of an hour and a half, I had to look at him, and I wasn't really figuring it out. And I'm not of that mind. And I looked at him and said, "You know what? I'm just not going to be able to be the best Amway salesperson you've ever come across. I don't think it's going to work. I mean, great products. I'm sure it works for some, but I am not your Amway guy. And, you know, and so that was the end of my sit down. That was the last time I ever sat with anybody to figure out how to get rich or ever talk to anybody about how to get rich. But anytime somebody stands up and talks about how to get rich, there's usually going to be an audience of people that are closely listening and will pay to hear their advice. You know, I don't think we view it this way a lot of times, but a lot of people came to hear Jesus speak. And after he would do healings and after he would do this or that, there would be a sense of, in case you didn't know it, there would be a sense of, hey, you know what? Jesus might actually tell us how to make money. I mean, he could be one of those guys who could get up and tell us how to make money. If anybody knows how to make money, it would be Jesus. And there was a lot of pressure on Jesus, a lot of pressure in his day. Hey, Jesus, can you give us some advice? Can you share some of that heavenly wisdom that you have? Hey, didn't you take a few fish and some loaves of bread, and didn't you multiply those? And Jesus would have said, yeah. And people would have said, can't you do the same with our denarii? I mean, if I give you 3 denarii, can't you multiply it? I mean, there were a lot of people who would have said, hey, Jesus, you heal people, yeah? So what's the big deal? If you can heal somebody, what's the big deal in you just kind of like multiplying people's wealth? Or, hey, you know, and so there was pressure on Jesus. There was expectations that when Jesus would speak at times, people would say, hey, let's go see what he has to say about money, and maybe this guy can help us get rich. Where a central text that we're dealing with this morning is Matthew chapter 6, verse 24 through 34. And you can turn there with scripture. We're going to hone in on the first verse particularly. I think that Jesus knew a lot of times when he's getting up to speak that a lot of people were hoping that he would say something about money, and particularly that he would have some advice on how to get rich. But Jesus doesn't do this. Instead, he goes a different direction, as all of us are very familiar with. And let's lock in on verse 24. And Jesus, speaking to the crowd, I can't help but think that the discourse that he shares in Matthew 6, 24 through 34 is a response to a question, is a response to something he's overheard. I think that when he gives that discourse on wealth right there, he is responding to a situation at hand, and he feels like he has to address it. And listen to what he says. He says, you can't worship two gods at once. Loving one God, you'll end up hating the other. Adoration of one feeds contempt for the other. You can't worship God and money both. There's a key word in the passage there that's in the Greek, verse 24. It's the word serve. And he uses that word of you can't serve one God, you can't serve two gods at once. That word serve has a deep meaning. It's a solemn, covenantal service rendered to a king type of meaning, saying you can't serve one king. You can't serve two kings. You can only serve one king. He uses that word serve there in that covenantal type of thing to say that if you're not serving your king, then you're serving another. And so if you're not serving God, then you're a slave to another. And in this instance, Jesus saying, if you're not serving God, then you're a slave to money. He's basically saying you can't worship God and money both. Friedrich Nietzsche was not a Christian man. German philosopher, German playwright, wrote books, a critic of Christianity. But one thing that, as a critic of Christianity, he saw occurring in the West, particularly of the church, was this love of God and love of money. And here was his forecast for Christianity, for the Western church. He said, this is what I'm seeing occur right now in Western culture. I'm seeing that Western culture will replace God with money. Listen to this. He says, what was once done for the love of God is now done for the love of money. He goes on and talks about that. I was thinking about this love of money and we can't serve both gods, and came across a Gallup poll not too long ago that really caught my attention. The Gallup poll did a study across various socioeconomic groups, and so they wanted to find out amongst various socioeconomic groups how people defined rich. What does it mean to be rich to people across all various types of socioeconomic groups? And so when they interviewed people making $30,000 a year, they asked them, what is rich to you? And people making $30,000 a year said, we think rich to be making $60,000 a year. If we were making 60 instead of 30, we consider ourselves to be rich. The Gallup poll then went to a group of people who made $50,000 a year. And they asked the people who are making $50,000 a year, what would you consider to be rich? If you're making this amount of money, what would be rich? And what do you think their magic number was? $100,000. And the Gallup poll would then continue to do it throughout other socioeconomic groups. And they found out that it didn't matter if you made 30, 50, 75, 100, 125, no matter what it was, that just about every person in every group considered themselves to be rich if they could make twice as much in salary per year than what they were currently making. Money Magazine, I was very interested in this. Money Magazine did a survey amongst its readers. And Money Magazine asked its readers, it said, what would you consider yourself to be rich? If you had so much of money, what would you need to be rich? The average reader from Money Magazine said this. The average reader replied to the survey, if I had $5 million of liquid assets, I would be rich. So Money Magazine knows now that their average reader probably has close to $2.5 million in liquid assets. They asked a group, Money Magazine asked a group of its readers, do any of you make over $5 million a year? And they had a group of people who said yes. And they asked them, how much money do you need to be rich? And what number do you think that those members gave them? How much do you think they said? Almost exactly what the Gallup poll said they would say, $10 million to be rich. Let me throw out a scenario here for you. This is all perspective, and we just got to take these polls for what they are. I know our tendency is to dissect them, deconstruct them. I know we could be a little cynical and go, well, did they do this or this or this? But let's just play the polls the way they're given to us. Here's something, a scenario that's not like the polls. This one pretty much has to stick for us. If you were offered, all of us here in this room, if you were offered a job that paid $37,000 a year in salary, would you be interested in it? Would you be interested in a job that paid you $37,000 a year? That would be your salary. Would you be interested? Probably for us in this room, we would honestly reply. We would be considerate. We wouldn't be proud in our reply, but we would say, probably not. I'm probably not interested in a job that pays $37,000 a year. It's all about perspective. And I understand what $37,000 a year is in Oakland County. And you understand what $37,000 a year is in Oakland County. We understand that. And we know it's not much, if anything. Probably aren't living in Oakland County. If you make $37,000 a year and you were the only breadwinner for your family, you probably wouldn't even be living in Oakland County on $37,000 a year. So we get that. On a global scale, since we are a global economy now, do you know that if you make globally, and I know there are a lot of variables, if you make $37,000 a year, you are in the world's top 4% of richest people. Top four. According to the Global Bank, you're in the top 4% of the world's population if you make more than $37,000 a year. That means for 96% of the world's population, a $37,000 a year salary would be a very significant increase to what they currently live on. Now, we know this. It doesn't surprise many of us. We know that's probably the case, and we could spend some time thinking about that, but let's not. Let's just take it for what it is. We know that in consideration of the global context, we know that we are the first people ever. We are. In historical terms, we're the first people ever, our culture here in America, that can basically work 5 days a week. Most of us basically work 5 days a week, and in working 5 days a week, our family is cared for 7 days a week. meaning if you put in 5 days of work, your family will have food, shelter, clothing, and everything for 7 days. For most of the world's culture, that's just unheard of. They can't even imagine that you could work 5 days a week and that you would actually, that work for 5 days would actually be enough to carry your family over for 7 days, because they work every day of the week just to provide for the essentials. It's never happened before. The life and the culture that we have established here has never happened before. It really doesn't matter where we stand on the economy right now, and we might have some various opinions about where our economy is at. It really doesn't matter, because overall, if you take a global perspective on the situation, we live in the richest time, and we live in the richest nation in history. In history. That's our reality. That's where we live. Now, we hear all this, and we have to ask ourselves the question of, so what does that mean? What does that mean for us? I mean, you know, being rich is a moving target. No matter how much money we have or make, we would probably never consider ourselves rich. Seriously, an exercise. If somebody came up to you today, honestly, you didn't know them, but they looked at you and they said, they don't know you, you don't know them, but it's an odd situation. I know I'm putting an odd situation in front of you. But they came up to you and said, are you rich? What would you say? Right. Right. If you had any situation, any scenario, I can't imagine one. I mean, if someone came up to me and said, are you rich? I look at them and go, are you crazy? No, I'm not rich. No. I mean, right? That's kind of a reply. I think if I were asked that question, am I rich? I think 99.9% of the time I'd look at someone and go, I'm not rich. No, I'm not. I know somebody who is. I could give you their name, but it's not me. You know, I think as we talk about this and as we go a little bit farther in, I think there's a really important lesson for us today. And I think that we've got to get this, and I think it's biblical, and I think we're going to learn more about this today. I think a lot of us are going to have to come to acceptance, awareness, acknowledge, realization today. We're rich. We're rich. It wouldn't be right for me as a pastor to get up and tell you how to be rich. Because according to all standards, according to the world, according to what we live in today, we're already rich. We're already rich. As a matter of fact, it hit me in preparing for this that the biggest challenge facing me, facing you, really the biggest challenge facing us, is that we've lost the ability to recognize that we're rich. That we don't recognize ourselves as rich is a problem. It's not good for us. It's not healthy for us. But really, in all realities, it would do us better. It would be better for us. It'd be better for our health if we already realized we are rich. Think about that. A person who makes $250,000 a year doesn't consider themselves rich. They would consider themselves rich if they made $500,000 a year. Do you know how much anxiety that person must experience? Do you know how much anxiety we experience? Do you know how much unrest we experience? Do you know what that does to us when we go, man, if I just made double of what I make, I'd be better, I'd be rich? What does that do to us? That creates unrest. It makes us work harder. It puts stress upon us. It puts expectations upon us. We live lives where we go, man, we'll never have that. I'll never be able to live that way because I can't make $150,000 a year. And we look and we go, I'm locked in at 75. I'll never get to 150. But man, if I could get to 150, life would be so much better. And so having to have double of what we already make, what does that do to us? Kills us. It's not good for us. And so we're trying and we're striving and we want to be rich. But what if the truth is in the global perspective says, man, why are you doing that? You already are rich. And we look and we go, I'm rich? And everyone, 96% of the world's population, looks and goes, yeah, you are. What would that do to us if we just took a second and said, wow, I'm rich. I don't have to make double. I'm rich. I don't have to make 25% more this year. I'm already rich. So that's where I want to go with this today. That's where I want to take us, is that I think the first challenge that we have as a church is, for most of us, a large percentage of us, is accepting the fact and coming into awareness we're already rich. If you go to the book of Luke, in the book of Luke, there's a character that you're very used to. In the book of Luke, chapters 19 and 20, introduce us to a guy that we come to love. His name is Zacchaeus, right? And all of you love Zacchaeus. We love the song about Zacchaeus that some of us learned in Sunday school. But we love Zacchaeus. Why do we love Zacchaeus? You know why we love Zacchaeus. Those of you who are not familiar, Zacchaeus is he's a bad guy. He's a tax collector for the Romans. And not only is he a tax collector, he's a crooked tax collector. And what does that mean? It means he extorts more money from Jewish people than he's supposed to. So he's a really bad tax collector. He's like the arch tax collector. And nobody likes Zacchaeus. But why do we come to like Zacchaeus? What is it about Zacchaeus that endears us to him? Well, he's got a little physical impediment, doesn't he? What is it? He's short. So what does he do? Climbs a tree. Climbs a tree to see Jesus. And we're like, oh my goodness. I mean, how cool is that? I mean, powerful, prideful tax collector climbs a tree. Gotta love that guy. Gotta love that guy. Jesus loves that guy. Because what does Jesus do? Jesus points to him. Says, you, Zacchaeus. And Jesus knows who he is. It's not like a mind game. Jesus knows who he is because everybody knows who he is. I mean, his poster is hanging up everywhere. Like, hit reward, you know. I mean, this guy is just not liked. So Jesus looks at him and goes, Zacchaeus. Everybody's looking like Jesus, like, you know who he is. Jesus is like, yeah, come on down. And Zacchaeus comes down. And what do we love about Zacchaeus? Well, Jesus says, I'm coming to your house today, right? He goes to Zacchaeus' house. Now listen, Zacchaeus had the house. I mean, this guy was living good life. Like I said earlier, students, but like that it was like pimp my palace good. I mean, it was that good. And Jesus said, I'm going to your house. And he goes to Zacchaeus' house. And so Jesus is saying, you know, if I'm going to have dinner tonight, I'm going to have a really good dinner. I'm going to go to Zacchaeus' house, and I'm going to sit, and there's going to be the lavish wealth and everything. So Jesus goes to the house of the richest guy in town, Zacchaeus. He goes there for dinner. And while he's there, what happens to Zacchaeus? Why do we love him? What happens to him? What do you think happens to Zacchaeus? You know the story, right? What does he do? So Jesus is having dinner, tells it so wonderful in Luke. And this story is so familiar to us. But something interesting in the story I never, ever realized until yesterday. Because it was bugging me. Jesus goes to Zacchaeus' house. Zacchaeus and Jesus have dinner. In the course of that dinner, in the course of their conversations, Jesus helps Zacchaeus see himself for who he really is, first time. Somewhere in that conversation, Jesus manages to metaphorically put a mirror in front of Zacchaeus so that Zacchaeus is able to see himself for the first time in a way he's never seen himself before. And he responds to his reflection, he responds to Jesus' ability to help him see who he is with something. Two promises. Do you know what two promises Zacchaeus makes to Jesus at that dinner? He says this. He says, I'm aware that all of my wealth, I'm aware that everything I've amassed, I have so much. I think when he had dinner with Jesus, it was the first time he had ever realized how much he had. I think when he has dinner with Jesus, the first time he ever looks at himself in the mirror and goes, I'm rich. I'm rich. Somehow Jesus in that dinner helped him to see he was rich. And when Zacchaeus sees that he's rich, he makes two promises. First promise he says to Jesus is this, I'll give away 50% of my wealth. 50% of my wealth. Listen, nobody gives away 50% of their wealth unless they realize they're rich. He's a smart man. He's a tax collector. He knows how to do numbers. 50% of my wealth. Think about that. A guy who didn't even know Jesus before dinner, and he's giving away 50% of his wealth because he's able to see he's rich. The second promise Zacchaeus gives to Jesus is this. He said, I have much wealth. And you know, And I know, everybody at the dinner table knows, and everybody outside my house knows how I've acquired it. I've cheated. I've cheated the system. Cheated people. I've cheated. Not everybody, but some people. And so he says, I'm coming clean. Here's what I'm going to do. For everybody I've cheated, and I know who they are, and they know who they know, even though the Mosaic law says I'm supposed to repay them back 20% interest, 20% interest. Those who you cheat, Mosaic law, you're supposed to pay back 20%. Zacchaeus says, I'll repay them 300% interest. Every account I cheated, I'll pay back 300%. And do you know that after Zacchaeus makes that second promise, do you know what Jesus says to him and to everybody in that house? Jesus says something that is so, so crucial. In response to Zacchaeus' promises, Jesus says, salvation has come to this house. Zacchaeus, in realizing how rich he is, doesn't ask Jesus, how much do I have to give? Because Jesus would have said, well, Mosaic law says 10%. Zacchaeus doesn't ask him that. Zacchaeus doesn't say, how much interest must I repay my loans back? Because Jesus said, Mosaic law says 20%. Zacchaeus doesn't ask how much I must give. So Zacchaeus responds when he knows he's rich and when he realizes he's rich, he says, how much can I give? How much can I give? Not must I give, but how much can I give? And when he says, how much can I give, that's when Jesus says salvation has come to his house. Here's what's really interesting about Zacchaeus' story. I don't always overlook those two promises Zacchaeus made. And then I overlook this part too. Is that Jesus doesn't look at Zacchaeus then, and he doesn't say, Zacchaeus, give away 100% of your wealth. Nor does he require him to. Jesus is fine with Zacchaeus just giving 50%. And you got to realize, Zacchaeus had a lot. But Jesus doesn't require him to give it all away. He's okay with Zacchaeus just giving away 50%. Zacchaeus doesn't stop being a tax collector. He continues to be a tax collector. He just continues to be an honest tax collector. He continues to be a compassionate tax collector. But Zacchaeus, even after meeting Jesus, still continues to be a tax collector. He still is going to be a tax collector. He still is going to make very good money. Jesus doesn't require him to stop being a tax collector. And as I thought about that, I thought, oh my goodness. Not until yesterday did I realize, you know what Zacchaeus has been? He's been a really good example to us of how to be rich and how to follow Jesus. How to be rich and how to follow Jesus. He becomes a really good, rich follower of Jesus.